Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A Czech asylum test fails its EU exam. The Ninth Circuit holds a gloves-off hearing on Prop 8, and a new LGBT generation queues up. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 11th, 2010. The European Union's Fundamental Rights Agency has told the European Parliament that the protection of LGBT rights varies considerably among its member countries. The comprehensive report was produced in response to the Parliament's request for an in-depth examination of the situation for LGBT people following the proposal or passage of anti-lesbi-gay laws in some EU nations. The co-president of the European Parliament's Intergroup on LGBT Rights, Michael Cashman, said that the report shows the EU might be the world's most advanced region in terms of legal protection for LGBT people, but also that much more needs to be done for genuine equality.
The EU's Fundamental Rights Agency also criticized one of its member nations this week, the Czech Republic, for using arousal tests to confirm that a person seeking asylum on the basis of sexual orientation is genuinely gay. A man who says he fears persecution in his homeland because he's gay is hooked up to a machine that measures blood flow to the genitalia as he's shown heterosexual porn. If he gets aroused, he's denied asylum. There were no reports about female asylum seekers being subjected to something similar. Czech officials defended the tests, saying that they are always conducted with expert supervision and with the full written consent of the asylum seeker. The EU Human Rights Agency said that the Czech Republic is the only member state that uses such tests, which could violate international human rights laws against torture or degrading treatment. The agency also noted that bisexuals would probably not pass the test and that they do not definitively confirm a person's sexual orientation.
The Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays, or JFLAG, reported on its website this week that a 26-year-old group member had been found stabbed to death in what JFLAG said could be a hate crime. The group said his name was being withheld pending notification of relatives. Jamaica is by far the most hostile nation toward sexual minorities in the Caribbean region. Consensual, private, adult, same-gender sex is outlawed. Government leaders often rail against gays. The lyrics of some leading Jamaican dancehall performers are notoriously homophobic, and social stigma keeps most of the island's LGBT population deep in the closet. JFLAG said the man may have been threatened for his activism and called for a full investigation of the murder. But the group questions whether security forces will treat the crime seriously.
The U.S. Senate, in a December 9th vote, rejected taking action to repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell ban on gays and lesbians serving openly in the military. The vote was 57 to 40. 60 votes were needed to overcome Republican opposition to debating the entire annual defense spending bill, which includes congressional authorization to repeal the 17-year-old law. The repeal-inclusive bill has already passed the House of Representatives, and President Barack Obama, Defense Secretary Robert Gates, and Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Admiral Michael Mullen are eager to end the ban. All but one of the 42 Senate Republicans voted against repeal. Susan Collins of Maine cast the only GOP pro-repeal vote. All Senate Democrats, except Joseph Manchin of West Virginia, voted for repeal. Two Republicans and one Democrat did not vote. Independent Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut, a longtime repeal supporter, promptly announced that he, Senator Collins, and other senators plan to introduce a new standalone bill to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell that is not tied to any other bill.
Lieberman said he's already received approval from Majority Leader Harry Reid to bypass Senate rules and the otherwise First Step committee process. Lieberman said he would bring the bill up for debate and a full vote on the Senate floor soon. A joint statement issued at week's end by several national LGBT military and rights advocacy organizations expressed muted optimism that repeal could still be achieved under that scenario during the waning days of this year's congressional session. Some federal courts have already ruled that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is unconstitutional. Most observers believe that congressional failure to overturn the law could eventually bring the issue before the U.S. Supreme Court.
The Family Research Council claimed that the defense spending bill also includes a provision to establish abortion clinics in military hospitals. And according to the Raw Story website, the American Family Association tied gays serving in the military to the widely reported WikiLeaks story. Private Bradley Manning has been in U.S. custody since he was linked to a WikiLeaks release earlier this year. Brian Fisher, the AFA's head of issues analysis, claimed that Manning's gay sexual orientation is a matter of public record and that he launched the WikiLeaks campaign to strike back at the military for its Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, which he vehemently opposed. As with many other claims by homophobic zealots, Fisher provided no evidence to back up that allegation.
In other U.S. news, the LGBT Dallas Voice newspaper reports that the Fort Worth, Texas City Attorney's Office has dropped all charges against Chad Gibson and George Armstrong, two patrons of the Rainbow Lounge in June 2009, when local police and state agents conducted a physically violent raid. Gibson was charged with misdemeanor public intoxication and assault on a law enforcement officer after allegedly resisting a Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission agent who claimed that Gibson had groped him. Gibson was hospitalized for a serious head injury he suffered during the raid. Armstrong said he had been roughed up and severely bruised. The Fort Worth Police Department and the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission conducted separate internal investigations, and each concluded that the officers and agents had violated proper procedures and should not have raided the bar in the first place. Three police officers involved in the raid were also suspended for 5 days.
And 19 patrons of the Eagle Bar in Atlanta, Georgia, have won $1 million settlement from the city for being subjected to a similar raid in September 2009. Police claimed at the time that they were acting on anonymous tips of drug use and sexual activity at the bar, but no evidence of those allegations was found. The bar patrons sued the city of Atlanta, former police chief Richard Pennington, and 48 Atlanta vice officers for excessive force and homophobic abuse in the raid, during which 62 patrons were forced to lie face down on the bar floor. No search warrant was served, the raiding officers shouted anti-gay slurs, and no charges resulted against any of the patrons. The city council approved the monetary amount this week, and a federal judge overseeing the case approved the settlement. Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed also issued a public apology for the men's mistreatment, and the city additionally agreed to oversee police department reforms as part of the settlement.
Two studies about U.S. LGBT youth also made news this week. One was disturbing, and the other could hardly be considered surprising. According to a report in the Pediatrics Journal, sexual and gender variant kids are punished more often and more severely than their heterosexual peers for the same offenses by school officials, police, and the courts. The results of the research concluded that the unequal treatment of LGBTQ young people is not explained by greater engagement in illegal or transgressive behaviors. Two different studies asked a diverse cross-section of young people across the country about common teen behavior that includes lying to parents, drinking, shoplifting, and vandalizing, as well as more serious offenses like burglary, drug sales, and physical violence. The research found that prejudice was greatest against lesbians. There were 50% more police stops and twice as many juvenile arrests and convictions reported for lesbians than for straight teen girls in similar circumstances. The study said the reasons for the disproportionate treatment of LGBTQ teens by authorities were not clear, but could be rooted in hostility toward teens that don't fit accepted gender roles.
And a study called Family Acceptance in Adolescence and the Health of LGBT Young Adults, published in the Journal of Child and Adolescent Psychiatric Nursing, came to the less than startling conclusion that familial support for LGBT youth reduces their rates of depression, substance abuse, and thoughts of suicide, and contributes to a teen's overall health in adulthood. Among its specific findings, high religious involvement in families was strongly associated with low acceptance of LGBT children. The study's author, Dr. Caitlin Ryan, who led the research team at San Francisco State University, noted that their findings have critical implications, not only for how families relate to their LGBT kids, but for how LGBT young people are served by a wide range of providers, including pediatricians, nurses, social workers, school counselors, and in custodial and foster care systems.
And finally, Brazil's Social Security Ministry issued a statement on December 10th that the surviving spouse of a same-gender couple is entitled to the pension payments once received by his or her partner. The policy covers formally registered workers who pay monthly Social Security fees. While same-gender marriage is not legal in Brazil, equality activists have been fighting for pension rights for the past 10 years. In 2000, a court in the state of Rio Grande do Sul granted inheritance rights to same-gender couples and allowed them to add their partners to health insurance and retirement plans. According to the Associated Press, the Brazilian government now believes that same-gender couples in stable relationships are entitled to the same Social Security benefits as their heterosexual counterparts.
That's News Wrap for the week ending December 11, 2010. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. Read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Greg Gordon. Queer. How did that word just make you feel? We'll examine that contentious question later in the program. The wheels of what will hopefully be justice turned another round December 6th. Mark Maracle and Glenn Reeder anchored Pacifica Radio's coverage of Law and Order in a California courtroom.
The issue of gay marriage reached its highest hearing ever today before the Federal Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. Supporters of California's Proposition 8 ban on same-sex marriage argued that Prop 8 is constitutional, while opponents supported a lower court ruling that Prop 8 violates constitutional protections under the Constitution's Equal Protection and Due Process clauses. The court also heard arguments over who is eligible to appeal the lower court ruling in an unprecedented three-hour hearing. Christopher Martinez reports from San Francisco.
The debate over lesbian and gay couples' right to marry is coming down to definitions. What is marriage? Who gets to define it? And, in more legalistic terms, who gets to sue over it? Lawyer Charles Cooper argued the case for the proponents of the Proposition 8 ban on same-sex marriage.
It is whether the definition of marriage, that momentous issue, is one for the people themselves to resolve through the democratic process, as they did in enacting Proposition 8, or whether our Constitution takes that issue essentially out of their hands and decides it for them, as the plaintiffs argue here.
Lawyer Theodore Olson is one of the lawyers opposing Prop 8. He told the court Prop 8 stripped more than a million gay and lesbian Californians from what the U.S. Supreme Court calls the most important relationship in life.
It is important to focus on the fundamental fact that California has engraved discrimination on the basis of sex and sexual orientation into its fundamental governing charter. The label given to Proposition 8 in the official voters' pamphlet said it all. It eliminates the right of same-sex couples to marry.
The three federal appeals judges posed tough questions to both sides, including questions over whether the ballot proponents of Prop 8 can appeal the federal district court ruling that struck down the initiative, even though Governor Schwarzenegger and State Attorney General Jerry Brown declined to defend the measure. The judges also asked about the initiative in light of other California laws granting lesbian and gay couples all the rights of marriage except the name of marriage. Lawyer Cooper defended the initiative.
The name of marriage is effectively the institution, and the issue here is whether it will be redefined, essentially, to be a genderless institution that bears little or very no relationship to the traditional historic purpose of marriage.
The appeals court is expected to rule early next year in a case that could well go to the U.S. Supreme Court. Supporters of the Prop 8 ban on gay marriage say other courts have supported what they call traditional marriage between a man and a woman. But supporters of marriage for gay and lesbian couples say they were encouraged by the tone of the hearing. John Lewidge of the group Marriage Equality USA says he's one of the lucky few who were able to marry a partner of the same sex before Proposition 8. He says the trends favor marriage rights for same-sex couples.
After the California Supreme Court case in 2008, all state courts, in fact, all lower federal courts as well, have ruled in favor of equality for gay and lesbian people. Iowa, Connecticut, the federal court in Massachusetts, the federal court in California here that's being reviewed today. The trend is unmistakable.
While the appeals court considers the Prop 8 case, a new governor and attorney general will take office in California, both of whom support the rights of same-sex couples to marry. And both say they will not defend Prop 8 in court, even if it goes to the U.S. Supreme Court. Reporting from the Federal Appeals Court in San Francisco, I'm Christopher Martinez.
Members of the Los Angeles gay and lesbian community and their supporters watched the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals oral arguments from the L.A. Gay and Lesbian Center viewing room. Pacifica's Dan Fritz was there, and he files this report.
That is nonsense that you can enact a proposition that walls off the citizens of this state from a fundamental right because you're worried that otherwise children might be prematurely preoccupied with issues of sexuality. That, of course, if that was a justification, it would equally warrant banning comic books, television, video games, and conversations with other children. It is science.
During the oral arguments, the crowd of mostly Los Angeles LGBTQ community members found a few moments of lightness in a matter that troubles many of them. While the legal challenge to Prop 8 winds its way through the court system, a whole slew of gay and lesbian issues are being brought to the light of day. John Davidson is the legal director of Lambda Legal.
Why is it that when you talk about same-sex couples getting married, that's going to cause children to think about sexuality? But when we talk about different-sex couples getting married, that doesn't cause children to think about sexuality? I mean, marriage is about love and commitment. It's not just about sex. For many couples, they have sex before marriage. Some couples don't have sex after marriage. Sex is not a necessary prerequisite to being married or getting married, but it's also not limited to marriage. And I think that's part of, again, the bias that's reflected in some heterosexuals people's thinking about gay people.
Viewers expressed mixed feelings about watching the oral arguments.
Well, it's really great to see the process as it's happening. I mean, this is history.
As a queer woman, it's always challenging to sit in a room and watch as a group of people decide what I'll get to do with my rights.
Not everyone in attendance was gay. Some local supporters showed up to watch the historic C-SPAN broadcast.
I'm straight, I'm 36, just an interested observer. I follow this case.
Moss Criven lives in Hollywood and volunteers at the L.A. Gay and Lesbian Center.
When you say to someone you can have everything but, it's discrimination.
Dan Fritz, Pacifica Radio, Los Angeles.
Our thanks to Mark Maracle, Glenn Reeder, Christopher Martinez, and Dan Fritz of Pacifica Radio News.
Will you still be here when the hot cools down?
This sassy artist, along with seven others, brings an eclectic mix to Audiophile's grand finale on our half-hour special, The Audiophile 2010 Year in Review. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. We'll conclude our 14-year run here on This Way Out as we take a look back at our eight favorite artists of the year on The Audiophile 2010 Year in Review, coming your way the week of December 27th.
Out and Equal Workplace Advocates is a San Francisco-based organization dedicated to creating inclusive employment environments. This Way Out's Sherry Lund went to their 2010 Workplace Summit in Los Angeles to see how the group is affecting corporate America. But there was one fascinating individual there that Sherry had to learn more about.
Hi, I'm Angela Wilson, otherwise known as Q, and I am the Senior Program Associate at Out and Equal.
Angela, a lot of times in the LGBT community, there are other letters that get added onto that acronym, I-S-S-A-T-S. We want to talk a little bit about the Q today. Tell me what that means for you.
One, for me, Q is my nickname. But when it comes to sexuality and gender, it's for queer. That's how I identify.
A lot of times the word queer is incredibly controversial in the LGBT community, especially amongst older folks who have had that term thrown at them as, you know, it's a hate incident for them or prior to a hate crime against them.
I do see where that has been an issue before for people. And I can understand for someone who is more established or more senior member of our community, how they could see that as a derogatory. But I think part of the progress that has been made by our elders in the community is that we can take those words and make them our own. And so by choosing a word like queer to identify, it's empowering ourselves to do that. In actuality, I think it's a very big tribute and an honor to the work that's already been put into our struggle and our fight to be able to claim that word as our own. So much of our history is gone. It's not been recorded or it's unavailable to us. So many people have passed on and their families were not supportive of who they were. So bits and pieces of brochures and handouts and newsletters that no longer exist that were in someone's garage and attic have been thrown away. The best parts of our history, the most active parts are those pieces that are living, those people who are there. I would say instead of being upset and angry, sit and talk and give us more of that information. Tell us your struggles and your fights and further empower us. We're not trying to be derogatory or dishonor that at all. We're doing exactly the opposite.
And so when someone throws the word queer at you in a non-supportive way, what sort of response or reaction do you feel is appropriate?
For me personally, I just look at them. I'm like, tell me something I don't know. It just doesn't hold that inflammatory value for me anymore. It's something that this person has an issue with. So more often than not, instead of being aggressive towards them, I'll ask them if there's something they want to talk about, if there's a question that they have. And I'm more than willing to honestly stand there and talk with somebody about it.
So it becomes an educational opportunity for those people who aren't just throwing it and driving past. What do you say to these people?
I explain to them, one, that it is an empowering term for me. Two, I try to help them see how that makes them look less mature. It's a very childish and sophomoric thing to do, to call someone a name. We're past the age where we should be bullying. We shouldn't be bullying at all, ever. We're adults. So if you want to have a discussion, if you want information, all you need to do is ask.
And so the positive end of queer, this young queer community who is on the rise now, who are out at Prop 8 protests, who are out at Don't Ask, Don't Tell protests, what resources for folks who want to find out more about the young queer community can you suggest for our listeners?
I would think the best way to do that is on a local level. Contact your local gay and lesbian pride center. Those are great places to start. You can't go wrong there.
Q, you started originally as a young street activist, and you are now sitting in the professional gay corporate environment. As I sit across the table from you and I see your blonde mohawk, tell me a little bit about that transition from street activist to corporate advocate.
Part of that had to do with being so involved with my university. I met a number of people that were involved with HRC and things like that. At the time, I didn't follow the opportunities. I moved on with my life, continued being on the board for our local pride movement, being involved with students, and just started doing presentations around sexuality, sexual orientation in the community. As I moved on, I started to meet more and more people at different events and happened to run into someone who was affiliated with Out and Equal and was discussing with them that I wanted to do presentations for a living. This is my passion, speaking to people about sexuality and gender and giving them the opportunity to ask questions of someone, because most people say that they don't know someone and that's the main reason why they don't support things that are gay oriented. They're like, I don't know anyone who's gay, so how does that affect me? So I want them to have the opportunity to actually sit and get to know me so then they have a vested interest in supporting our causes. So now I've gone from frontline pride marches and being the kid with the sign and, you know, rallying cries and being on the State House stairs to talking to people from Fortune 500 companies and actually having a place at the table with that. And it's very empowering. I really like it. I'm looking forward to helping other grassroots activists make that connection, not that you have to change who you are, because I haven't. I'm living proof that you don't. And you can be accepted, and to see the collaborations that can happen and how we can further what we're doing by working together.
What's been the reaction from these Fortune 500 companies to you and to the work that Out and Equal does?
They know it's in their best interest. as a Fortune 500 company, the only way you can get the top people to do the jobs that you want, people in those environments, a lot of the employees will refuse to work in an environment that's not all-inclusive. So we have some leverage there. So they want to do the right thing, and they are looking to have some sort of instruction, some sort of guide. If they don't have it, then they aren't capable, and we can't fault them for that.
We've been speaking with Angela Q. Wilson from Out and Equal here at the Los Angeles Convention Center. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Hello. My name is Jonathan Ryan Lee. I live in the Jemez Mountains in New Mexico. I was writing a series of gay poems a few years ago, wanting to come up with some strong words that would hopefully demonstrate to people how it is to be homosexual in this society. In this poem, I enlisted William Shakespeare to help make my point. Any other name. I've been called queer, sissy, fruit, fairy, faggot, pansy, homo, pussy, Susie, Nelly, bugger, powder puff, one of those, light on his feet, limp-wristed, mama's boy, child molester, flaming queen, butt boy, fudge packer. But a rose by any other name would smell as sweet.
That was Any Other Name from a collection of poems by Jonathan Ryan Lee called Rhyme Free Verse Haiku. Under his pen name of Holland Cedric Payton, Jonathan is also the author of Till Death Do Us Part, A Look Inside Long-Term Gay Relationships. Each book is available at Amazon.com.
I'm Rick Watts for This Way Out. We need your support to keep this one-of-a-kind international LGBT radio show on the air. Please log on to www.thiswayout.org to let us know you're out there. That's www.thiswayout.org.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Sherry Lunn, and Jonathan Ryan Lee contributed program material. Special thanks to Mark Miracle, Glenn Reeder, Christopher Martinez, and Dan Fritz from Pacifica Radio News, Elaine Baumgartel at KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and to Glenn Thamert. The Downtown Fiction performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is only made possible through the generosity of our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to add your support and connect to our blog, Facebook page, and tweets. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. You can also hear This Way Out on iTunes. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 2XX Canberra, Australian Capital Territory, KLAI, Fort Bragg, Laytonville, Willits, California, CJSF, Burnaby, British Columbia, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Everybody stay tuned.